Today on the Cooligans, we are back from the Premier League Fan Fest in Tampa. We had an incredible time. Both our Premier League teams lost. No. We are still recovering. We talk about Manchester City against Arsenal. Alexis is still recovering. The emotional trauma is here. And Everton lost in the Merseyside Derby. Liverpool fans, our producer Ingrid is quite happy about it, but Christian is furious.
I can't even enjoy Tottenham losing again. Oh my God. But the benefit of the show is we got stars coming in left and right, and we bring one back from the old days, baby. We got Tommy McNamara back on the show. We talk about the pizza tour. We talk about his career. We talk about him joining Brooklyn FC. And yo, apparently Andrea Pirlo drove him to work every day. How crazy is that? That and more today on the Cooligans.
If our voices sound a little bit hoarse, it's because we've been screaming at Premier League fans in Tampa all weekend.
I've been defending myself against Manchester City fans.
That's right. You know, I've been had to defend myself against Liverpool fans. But
they were more cordial.
Sure. I mean, but you were also more offensive, right?
So wow.
They were cordial because I'm cordial.
I usually have something to say, but I can't beat the allegations.
So no, we had an absolute incredible time in Tampa. If you were watching our socials and everything, you know, us hanging out with Theo Walcott, Alan Shearer at the Premier League Fan Fest, and alongside the whole crew at NBC Sports, Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, and Tim Howard.
It never gets old to be chilling and realize I'm watching. We got Meta glasses for this because we were going to shoot a bunch of content. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wanted to throw them on when we were in the green room and just do a quick scan. I know we would have gotten in trouble for posting it, but to be able to watch a game with Alan Shearer, Theo Walcott, the two Robbies, Rebecca Lowe was off, you know, doing her research as a good host would, but Tim Howard was sitting there. I'm like, how often we get to be in this room?
And it's not weird. We didn't have to break in or anything. Like you said, it never gets old. I mean, and we've been doing these since 2023. 2023, I think that was the first one in Philly. And it's the moments we're on stage and with the crowd are also like
That's the fun.
And then
it's cool because this happens. I think in Philly, we weren't sure how far we could go.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, and they were like beyond stage. They were like, oh, well, you guys just figure it out. Yeah. And we were kind of roaming around. So it didn't happen so much in Philly. But this is the first time, I think, where we kind of made our home on stage and we'll sort of walk in front of the cast when it's time for a break or whatever, where people were coming up to us and be like, yo, you guys are hilarious. Yo, you guys crushed it.
Mm-hmm.
The Philly and even Kansas City to a point, people were like, yo, that was great. You guys were, and more of it maybe in Kansas City, but this was the first one where people were like, whoa. People were walking up to me going with their phones out like, yo, tell me the name of the podcast again.
Yeah, yeah.
Or someone was like, yo, what's the first episode I should listen to? And I was like, I don't even know. Dog, we've done almost 1,000.
Yeah, I don't know where to begin. I mean, I had a kid who was probably like 8 years old. He's like, can you sign my Everton shirt?
Yeah.
And I'm telling his mom and dad, I'm like, I'm ruining this kid's shirt.
Sign it as Illiman and Jai. You
know? Okay. What an incredible moment for this kid.
You done?
He scores a goal that gets taken away for offside. And he signs your shirt in
also,
Tampa.
Also, was it a white kid?
He was a white kid.
He wouldn't even know if you're not Illiman and Jai.
That's right. White people cannot understand the concept of different black people.
No, dude.
They do not know.
You're like, trust me, I'm 98% sure it was him.
It'll be a nice core memory for the young man. No, it's just
Don Lemon. Christian looks like Don Lemon.
Thank you, YouTube.
Thank you, YouTube, for that, bro.
Don Lemon, Liam Rossignor, somebody, and this happened.
Liam Rossignor, I don't see, but I can
but
see.
But the glasses now do
I
it.
I can
yes.
see, yeah.
But a guy in the crowd yelled, Patrick Kluivert.
Yeah.
To
the
me.
And the guy next to him goes, Love Child. He was like, did you tag his bit? What was your favorite part of the fest?
I think the point that you were making about like how Philly, not that it didn't feel comfortable, right? It was like it was our first one. I think even for us and the crowd, they're also adjusting to the fact that there's now comedians during this soccer broadcast.
Yeah, because they're there to watch the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, how about us?
Yeah. So, and I think the biggest difference now is that there are people that have been to every fan fest that we've been at.
Yeah.
Right. So they come to every single one. These people do the pilgrimage and they follow the fan fest tour it goes.
There's a core of sickos that will get there at like 12:30 or whatever.
Exactly.
And they go to everyone.
So it's like,
that guy who was there at 12:30, I saw him in VIP. I was like, do you work here? How do you get into both?
I mean, it's like,
why are you in line and at VIP?
It's like they're following Taylor Swift around, bro.
Yeah, yeah. So to some degree, you're not wrong.
These are diehard people. So I think that part of it where more and more people are like if we weren't there, they would be like, where are the Cooligans? Like, it doesn't feel right. And I sort of kind of, because the only one we haven't done was Chicago in the middle of all of these. And everybody was like, that was kind of the worst one. They didn't love the vibes of it. It was raining and a bunch of other stuff. But hey, we could have maybe helped a little bit.
Yeah. Did you hear where the next one is?
I did, but we can't reveal that.
No, we can't reveal
that. So my favorite moment in this one in particular was sitting in the green room with Alan Shearer watching a particular game, and he made a comment about or Theo made a comment about something, I think you did, about is it too much pressure? And then
that was me. Because he kind of went, there's a meme that
a meme,
you referenced.
Yeah, so that's, but I got to I regret it now. I should have filmed something with him about it, because I think it was so funny, but the moment was so organic, because I
started by scoffing at a player.
Yeah.
That's why we're not revealing who it is, because let him do it if he wants to.
Yeah.
But he scoffed at a player, and the announcer had said, surely they were under a lot of pressure in that moment.
Yeah.
And he was like, he
said like, oh, what pressure?
No, but he just repeated
he just
he
said,
like,
yeah,
pressure.
Under pressure. Yeah. And then I'm right next to him, and I'm like, and I'm hearing the meme like right next to me. And
I actually
like,
don't know this meme.
You haven't, I should play it. The pressure, what pressure?
Was it from him being
from England? From the England penalties in, I think, a Euros match or something
like
that.
Where they lost.
But he was like, pressure.
The Euro finals. Probably.
What pressure? Let me play it for you, because it's iconic. And then people have made.
But he kind of laughed about it. He was like, yeah, that keeps, people keep repeating that.
Yeah.
But he did it in real time.
So it was.
I actually said to him, I go.
This one.
Yeah. Okay. I have heard that. I didn't realize that was him.
That's him. Yeah, yeah.
But he's sitting in between us on this big ass couch. So you brought up the meme and he kind of laughed about it and said, yeah, that comes up all the time. And I think he said like his daughter or something, or his son, whoever, one of his children plays it all the time. And then I go, and I was like, come on, man. And I'm talking about the moment because they're replaying it. I'm like, come on, man. You don't think that guy's under pressure? And he just looked at me and goes, what pressure? And I was just like, all right, cool. Like, I guess you're just cold-hearted, bro. But at the end of the day, that's why he was the player he was.
Yeah, yeah. Watching these games with these legendary players, and we've gotten to do that over the years, they aren't, especially these guys that like work in media as well, they aren't detached from the game at all. They are. It's like they're there.
I bet you if you put heart monitors to them, their heart rate would go up similar, not the same amount, but similar to what a player does in those moments. My favorite moment was also with Alan Shearer. It was me, Alan Shearer, and next to him, where you were sitting, is now Robbie Musto. So on the other side of Alan Shearer. And there's a 17-year-old making his debut in one of the games. I didn't even say, hey, Alan, or whatever. I just said, you remember your debut? He goes, yeah, of course. I go, Were you a starter or a sub? And he goes, no, I was a sub in the 75th minute for Southampton. I came in. And I was like, oh, nice. He goes, 2 weeks later, made my full debut. I go, wow, you must have did well. How'd you do? He looks at me and he paused. So I'm gonna tap the mic when he looks at me. Right. Hat trick. Yo, he looked at me like Batman, bro. He couldn't have been happy. And then Robbie Musto starts, everyone starts laughing.
Yeah, of course.
But Robbie Musto's laughing. He goes, he knew you were going to ask and he couldn't wait for it. He's thinking, go on, ask me how I did.
Yeah, he's been asked this before.
Oh my God.
He's rehearsed this moment several times.
Hat trick. Yo, cold.
Yeah.
Which Allen can come across a little stiff in some media. When you get to watch a game with him, you see him shine.
But Allen Shearer carries himself like he could score a hat trick today if necessary.
The only reason he ain't playing is because his knees. It's right. Not him.
It's only because Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies asked him.
I got too many responsibilities over here.
I have a lot going on in my life that I can't be scoring all these hat tricks.
Also, everybody loves him, man. He's like white Ian Wright. He's Ian White. You know, like everybody, regardless of a maybe even Middlesbrough fans love him. Like everyone's chanting his songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody hates Alan Shearer.
I agree. I mean, that's why they keep inviting him.
Yeah.
So it's worked out. But yeah,
Ian White, bro. That's bars.
He loves that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he would love that if I brought that up.
No, it was dope. We met a bunch of all the club ambassadors and players, former players. I spoke to Dallas, Stuart Dallas.
Yeah.
David James
Kevin
from Liverpool
was there as well.
Kevin
David
Phillips,
James,
Sunderland.
Yeah.
Who else was there?
There was a bunch.
Glenn Murray from
Glenn
Brighton.
Glenn Murray was from Brighton.
Wes Brown from Manchester United. Got to speak to him for a little bit.
I met him again. Kind of a dull guy.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay, I just did.
I thought he was cool. Anyway. Yeah.
You were a legend. Oh, and of course, Stephen Fletcher.
Stephen Fletcher. Friend of
who slapped me.
He
has to tell that story.
We cannot tell that story.
Yeah, at another time.
But tune into the Patreon.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah. That's very much an after show.
But yeah, Stephen Fletcher did slap him without telling him.
If you're not a member of our Patreon, consider joining for this story alone.
So So shout out to NBC, all the folks out there. Again, another incredible fan fest, and we're looking forward to the next one.
I don't know if you know this. I'm excited for today's show because it's a hot one.
Okay, well, you started way too early. We haven't even. It's still the audio intro, but.
No,
okay.
We're starting the show.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. Let's go here.
It's a hot one.
On Yahoo Sports, it is a hot
Who sang that?
Who sang the yodeling?
No, it's a hot one. That's a song. It's the beginning of a song.
Isn't it?
The guy with the guitar. The old Latin dude. Yeah, dude.
Okay. I was thinking.
Oh, it's a hot one. Isn't that the beginning of a song?
I was for some reason I was thinking of is it Mims or Mums? The one,
no,
this is why I'm hot. Yeah. Is it Mims? That's his name or Mums?
No, it's Mims.
Mims. Okay, yeah. That's
and now he's a memes. Anyway, all right, folks.
Anyway, welcome to Hot Ones.
I'm Sean. Whatever his name is. Sean Francis? What's his name?
No. Welcome to the Cooligan. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Okay, here on Yahoo Sports. We're excited because we have an incredible guest later today. We're back from the Premier League Fan Fest, but we had an incredible conversation with the one and only Tommy McNamara, former NYCFC, Houston Dynamo, New England Revolution. He is currently now playing in USL with Brooklyn FC. So we talk about his new venture and this part of his career, and maybe one day he might end up becoming a coach because that's the confidence I sort of felt from him.
Maybe one day he will ruin his opportunity to be a coach to hang out with us and do a little bit of maybe. Who knows?
I mean, you know what? It's a stain that can't get off your resume.
That's right, bro. So, no amount of vinegar you soak that in gonna get rid of that.
So we're excited to be back from Tampa from the Fan Fest.
It started out hotter than it ended because both our teams took big ol' L.
On stage in front of our opposing.
We had to respond to the haters in real time, dog.
So let's start with probably the biggest game of the weekend, which was Everton. Manchester City versus Arsenal.
With everything on the line in the biggest game of his career, Mikel Arteta failed. The season isn't over, but it certainly feels deflating. If he doesn't win a trophy this season, is it time for Arsenal to move on from the Arteta project?
This is the top topic.
It's a great question. It clearly depends on what the standard Arsenal fans have set. If second is not good enough and you're not winning trophies, I get it. But I can only speak as an Everton fan. I would love to be in second every
for no one cares about that
single,
right now.
Every single year, if that was an option.
Sure, but to be second 4 years in a row with the amount of investment that's been made, with the amount of commitment, you know, with backing of the manager when it comes to the transfer window, to redoing the entire club front to front, you know, from front to back, to just everything that the project has requested, that Mikel Arteta has requested, the best we know, he's been given that. You know, they went out and got the striker. They went out and got massive players across the board, whether it's Eze, like late in the window, you know, 17 more center backs, rougher, you know, give or take, to do all that and to still come up short against Manchester United in the biggest match of the year. Manchester City in the biggest match of the year, to have another April slump, another end of season slump.
It's a bad last
Arsenal,
4 weeks.
Yeah, it's terrible. And Arsenal, again, you know, going back to the, you know, the loss against Aston Villa, you know, previously. Yep. To
the Bournemouth one was also really
Bournemouth,
bad.
You know, yep. Just all of these little moments across these last four seasons. And maybe, you know, Liverpool had kind of run away from the season early, but to go back to all these little moments towards the end of the season where you felt like, yo, you've made enough of an investment, you've brought in enough players where injuries aren't going to hinder you and can't be an excuse, to having that again, whether it's Saka being out, Yuri and Timber being out. It just seems like there's too many asterisks on this plan. And then the question has to be, you know, is it time to move on? My heart tells me no, right? You know, you want to be given time. Sir Alex Ferguson got 5 seasons before, you know, he started winning.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Mikel Arteta has had more, but it goes to show, like, you know, that we're progressing in the right place. But then again, if you are an Arteta hater and you go back, you can make the claim that 4 seasons finishing second isn't progress. At some point, you have to finish first. And maybe I kind of hate to admit it, or I kind of hate to think about it, but maybe Mikel Arteta's taken them as far as he can. And if not getting them over the line at the end of the season is a hindrance of his, not being able to beat, you know, his, you know, teacher, if you will, in Pep Guardiola, then maybe it's time to move on.
Maybe, or I don't know. I mean, it's like, I mean, you're the Arsenal fan, so I will lean on you on like how, you know, how incensed, how frustrating, like how mad are you at the manager for not getting over that hump? I mean, it's, you look at,
What do you see on the outside looking in?
On the outside looking in, I see that the January transfer window and Pep Guardiola going after Mark Gahey was just little decisions to take a little bit of a chance. I mean, and they were trying to get Gahey for a while, but that move just adjusted the defensive issues. The reason Manchester City were down 6 to 9 points throughout the season was because they were giving up goals late. They were in the defensive issues. They had some injuries. I think Ruben Dias was out for a while.
Yeah.
They had young center backs, and
they had no real replacement for Kevin De Bruyne. They seemed to figure it out.
There was just a little bit of disarray, and I think that was defensive. Now they bring in Mark Gahey, just a tried and true English the center back, like will be at the World Cup, like just a great, great player to bring in to just sort of. Solidify things a little bit, and that in that place, this is why I was talking to somebody else about this at the fan fest. It's just like the concern for Arsenal is like they were doing everything so precise, they were playing such incredible defensive football, not giving up goals, focusing on the set pieces, and but everybody was annoyed, boring football, blah blah blah, and then they just sort of ran out of gas when it came to just like being an offensive threat. And they just are not really finding many goals.
I still blame Odegaard, although I don't think he had a terrible game. He didn't have a great game, but I don't think he had a terrible game. But I just blame Odegaard just clearly not being fully fit. Odegaard hasn't been himself ever since he got injured. And I don't know what the situation is. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. But he's the only player with a big chance created in this match. Even the subs that Arteta made were offensive. He was trying to go for the win. And we could say Eze took one shot. Technically, it's off target because it hit the post. But that was the most on target ever seen a shot. If it's literally an inch to the right, we're talking about an equalize. We're talking about a draw that helps Arsenal at least can keep control of whether they win the league or not. And it's so frustrating to think of something so small. and say if it was just a little bit over, the conversation we're having about Mikel Arteta is different. We're saying he made all the right choices. He found a way to battle Manchester City. I'm so, I don't even get this reference, but
I'm saying this is the we're looking at the Bournemouth, one of the players from Bournemouth after they beat Arsenal, and then Haaland after they beat Arsenal. Yeah. Like he's just there's a this.
That's not Bournemouth. That's Southampton.
Sorry. That was the FA Cup. Apologies.
Yeah, they've given up two goals now, like in what, four out of the last five matches or something crazy like that. I have to look back, but it to me, it's like there's a woe here that's, if it was ever going to be lifted, it should have been before this match, and it didn't. It's now continue.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to sort of make sense of, but there's like, you know, you need a little bit of luck on your side. I thought Arsenal had, like, ultimately more good chances. I mean, and clearly Manchester City, like,
the header for Havertz,
the 1v1 against Donnarumma for Havertz.
If he puts that on the ground, as opposed to trying to go straight, if he puts it into the ground,
it's a good shot. Yeah. And it's a good save. Like I mean, it
did get saved. It went over, but
the header. Yeah. I'm talking about the one shot. And then the we're watching the dude with the bottle, the Arsenal bottle. And bottling and stuff.
Yeah, can I just say this? If you're an American and you are doing bottle jokes, explain to me what bottling means. If you could tell me where the reference comes from, I'll take it. Because none of you know, and you're just making all these jokes. You're just cosplaying being British at this point.
Okay, there it is. Shots fired at Maddie FC for making plenty of bottle jokes.
Tell me where the reference is. You better look it up before I see you next, Maddie. Look it up before I see you next, Maddie.
So, I thought the City fans at the Fan Fest were also pretty funny because they were doing like a trophy lift, but they were lifting a bottle. Yeah. They were lifting a bottle. Yeah. So the banter was.
I hold firm that those were crisis actors. We didn't see any of those fans before the game or during it, but after the match, they were all around a camera chanting.
The Man City street team. Yeah, people.
Honestly do not believe that those are real Manchester City fans. I truly believe that those are crisis actors hired. I think George Soros is at the top of this thing.
man, this is. We're watching. We're looking at another tweet from James Alcas. Cherokee smiled at Incapié as he prepared to take his soul. This guy's boxing. Cherokee, I mean,
I truly believe Cherokee did smile at him. Like, he's that maniac.
We were talking about this before or during the game, I think. I was just saying, like, I literally did not think Ryan Cherokee would adapt to the Premier League so much because he is kind of a very loose sort of player. And
he's the most mavericky of all.
Kind of like a little bit of freedom. Needs a coach that trusts him because
his teammates don't know what he's going to do.
Right, because
that's the kind of player he is.
You know, Guardiola's not the biggest fan of like people pulling off Rabonas and stuff. So, it's impressive that. I mean, his goal was fantastic, and you can see whenever Ryan Cherokee gets in the box, which is not necessarily that often. Defenders are like, I don't know if I should go for the ball. I don't know how aggressive. Like, he is just.
He parts like
smooth.
The Red Sea.
Yeah, because
even his own players are like, let's just get into open spaces because I don't know if he's going to pass or shoot. What pisses me off is the last time Manchester City and Arsenal played, Ryan Cherokee did a couple juggles, couple keepy uppies, which annoyed Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, yeah.
Why was there not a response from Arsenal to that? I would have cleaned this guy's clock immediately.
A little bit early
that,
in the game.
That to me shows some of the mentality of Arsenal. Give me a second before we go to that. That shows to me the mentality of Arsenal not being able to come into this and sort of even defend themselves.
Sure. That's fair. Look, I just want to show this to you. It says Real Sociedad sold their entire Deadwood midfield trio to Arsenal. They then rebuilt their midfield, and now they've won a trophy before Arsenal.
Well, that's because they have a coach who's born in Jersey. So.
Shout out to Pellegrino Matarazzo.
What a name, by the way, once again.
Copa del Rey in penalties. That was incredible against Atletico, so good for him. But yeah.
I know, but the mentality is shocking. Like, Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira were on Sky Sports talking about this match, and I'm watching Patrick Vieira going, dude, he would have absolutely taken out Cherokee if you try to mock me.
Well, that's what I think.
And that was at Arsenal's ground.
Yeah. I think that's why.
Gabriel, wait, that was the final.
That was at Wembley. Yeah. But that was what I think. We saw the moment between Gabriel Magalhães and Erling Haaland. And obviously the back and forth and the tugging on the shirts and ripping the undershirt of which I've never seen. I've never seen ripping the undershirt of a player, which is so surreal. But look, on Haaland's goal, it was just so much back and forth. That where
I still think this should have been a foul on.
It is a foul. I mean, I'm not going to be kind of, I'm trying to be as objective as possible, but Erling Haaland pulls Gabriel out of the way so that he can get to the ball and then,
uses him to balance himself.
Uses him to balance himself and get the goal. So as a top tier striker, I'm like, man, this is like, if this was in 1998, I'd be like, man, this is how the game is played or whatever. But the age of VAR, I'm like, seems a little bit aggressive.
I also, look, the Bernardo Silva thing, I get it. But him, you know, sort of closing in on Havertz and taking him out, I still think that could have been a dog. So if you watch it, I still think he takes Havertz out.
Wow. And when they're Bernardo both Silva chasing the ball?
Yeah.
But it hit Havertz's hand. That's why he got stopped.
Oh, is it? I thought it was because of the... Oh,
no, okay. No. I hit his hand. That's why the... I mean, even still, Havertz should win that ball 10 out of 10 times.
1,000 times. That's a moment where there's two moments where I'm like, if that's Jokinez and not Havertz, I still think Havertz should have started. But in those moments where I'm like, if that's Jokinez... Bernardo Silva's tasting dirt.
But then, I mentioned, obviously, Haaland, what I thought was a foul on the goal. It is what it is. But they're both basically battling and fighting. But the headbutt from Gabriel, I thought...
I didn't see it. The ref didn't see it. VAR didn't see it. Nobody, you didn't see
nobody
it.
Nobody saw anything.
Why are you looking over there, dog? The image, mind your business.
The image that's on screen right now, I don't even see that image,
nah,
bro.
He's just saying, like, yo, what's that say on your chest? That's all that is, dog. I don't know. Yeah.
Etihad, I'm not familiar with it. Can you tell me more?
I think I sprayed cologne on the top of my head. Why don't you smell that right quick?
Okay, I just got some new plugs. And go take a look. Is it good?
You does know? It smell like my does doctor, smell like donor? I got it in Turkey.
Did my doctor do a good job? I want you to take a look.
Get up and close.
We're looking at Gabriel. He clearly, I mean, they're head to head. They're forehead to forehead, and he does push in and for in a headbutt motion. Haaland, to his credit, look, he doesn't take a ton of contact, but there is something happening there. And even Haaland said that if people asked him, like, why didn't you fall down on the ground? He's like, no, I didn't really feel that much contact. But here we're looking at it says, quote, if I fell on the floor, which I will not do unless someone really attacks me, I think maybe it would be a red card. And he said, I'm not sure. I will not fall on the floor as easy like this. Yellow card for me. I don't know why he comes up to my face. But, I mean, he also is not mentioning the fact that he pushed him beforehand.
Yeah, of course not. I think at the end of the day, I think this is one of the title fights, if you will, one of the bouts that I wish there was a camera just on the two of them all match.
Yeah.
And I could watch that in picture. This is the new Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira, as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, Gabriel, mugged is probably a good word.
He got mugged.
Yeah, dude.
Well, clavicular got you today.
So at the end of the day, I think Gabriel has a lot of, he has to question how he reacted to a lot of this.
Yeah, you can't let him get to you way.
Like, and if, speaking of going to the ground, you staying up when Erling Haaland is holding you to get a strikeout, that's when you got to fall on the floor. That's when you got to be like, I'm not going to let you do that.
Yeah. I mean, I like that as a neutral. I like that he wasn't given a red because it kept the excitement.
Yeah,
in the
that
game.
That was like, it could be red, but it's like, let him go.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I
he
can't
didn't make contact.
I have a lot of respect for Haaland. Not going down. I thought, you know, I think it kept the game entertaining.
You know,
as
it could have been us talking about how Arsenal were winning the league and Tottenham were probably getting relegated. And now I have to sit here and defend myself.
So another tweet says from Alex Crook says, by the way, an absolute mockery that Martinez gets sent off, Lisandro Martinez gets sent off for a hair pull on Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and Gabriel doesn't for a butting motion. Both are red cards. Do better, PGMOL.
I feel like we're making a lot of something that even Erling Haaland was like, well, who cares? So why are we talking about this?
Okay, I mean,
we just change the subject, bro? Everton also lost. Why are we doing this?
So last thing, this is why we see footballers be theatrical, because it often invokes punishment. Haaland doesn't react and Gabriel gets away with it. It's a red card. And I forgot who it was. Somebody was mentioning this, that for Man City's sake of winning the title, people are saying like Haaland should have went down because then Gabriel misses the next game. Well, misses three games for violent conduct. Gives Arsenal, Man City a better chance at winning the title. But again, I still think I respect Haaland for not, because I mean there was the motion, but there wasn't any severe contact where he was like attacked. But the intent was there.
That, if he would have grabbed his face and fell, there's
no
question.
If he was given the red, I would have understood. But part of me is like, all right, look, they're fighting, they're going back and forth, like. All right, let it go. Let it slide. They both got yellow cards, which is not totally fair for on Haaland's part, but it is what it is, and we move on.
Okay. Speaking
ball
of moving
up,
on.
Ball up top.
Speaking of moving on, Everton took a big old L to Liverpool in your new stadium, and I think it's a much bigger conversation than Arteta. I know you weren't the most confident in the world going into this game, but how do you feel watching Liverpool eke out a win against Everton?
The context of us being at the Fan Fest is like makes it harder, makes it a little bit more.
But you're prepared for there to be a lot more Liverpool and louder Liverpool fans.
Yeah,
but Everton fans are like too nice.
but still, because we know the sort of the Goliath that we're up against. Yeah. So to me, that game should have ended in a draw. Like that's probably the fair result. Everton had some decent chances and made it really difficult. And the game was chippy. You saw the back and forth with Illiman and Jai. You saw the very hard foul from Virgil van Dijk on Idrissa Gueye.
I don't know how that didn't get carded. He just cleaned him out. There was nothing. The ball wasn't even in his vision.
That's what those games are like. And I thought Everton made things really difficult for Liverpool for most of the game. I mean, the goal that Illiman and Jai scores and it gets taken back because of an offside hurts so much. And as soon as the goal was overturned, I'm like, dude, we're going to give up. We're going to give one up.
You know what is that moment? Everyone's celebrating. Illiman and Jai's like, we built this shit. Like, that moment, it's like, and then all of a sudden there's like a silence.
Right,
and that silence is gutted because you already know what's happening, but you're just hoping maybe this doesn't happen.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing with what you call it, with like the goal, a giveaway from Dwight McNeil, that leads to the pass from Gravenberch, a beautiful pass, and then Scott. I hated it that it was Salah and Virgil van Dijk that scored. Like anybody else,
the OG,
we can't be doing let the OGs do that. And then he said right there, Illiman just said we built this city for an offside goal. It's frustrating, but the moment
also he wasn't offside.
No, it was Jake O'Brien.
As far as he's concerned, I did everything right.
Like, bro, dude.
Talk to my mans, bro.
So it's frustrating to be burned by those two players but the highlight for me is like watching those last few moments with Tim Howard on stage in Tampa. And we have the footage here. We can take a look at it. But it is. What, like watching Everton games with Tim Howard is such a surreal. I mean, he is the reason that I am an Everton fan, and sharing in the grief of it. Like we're seeing Liverpool fans celebrating. We'll get a look at Tim Howard, but he effectively he's so upset, man.
He buries his head in his hands. You can't see it because the camera swings. And by camera, I mean your face.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're wearing Meta glasses here. But it's so gut. I mean, it's gut-wrenching. It kind of feels the same as watching an Arsenal match with Theo Walcott. It's no different, even though he's not the reason I watch it. But that guy already doesn't talk to me, so I'm watching with Theo. It's got to be frustrating for you, but it's like there was something about that felt like maybe there was a magic, you know, in the first derby at Hill Dickinson. Mm-hmm. And what are you guys calling it? The Hilly Dick? What are the Hill Dick?
We've been trying to, we haven't sorted that
Hilly
out.
Dick
yet.
Hilly
Dick is
kind of
cool,
right?
Crazy.
Also
yeah.
Sounds like a condition. Go to your doctor. Go to your doctor,
you
folks.
Got a case of Hilly Dick.
Oh, boy. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Some people have Valley Dick.
Yeah,
it's kind of bad, too.
it looks like a large ingrown hair. Anyway, but what you're going, I forgot. Even where I was, but when it felt like, you know, no one plays Liverpool harder than Everton, and it feels like it's more of an even match when you guys play each other.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And this game towards the end did not feel that way. It felt like you guys were getting the momentum early on, and it very quickly swung back to Liverpool's way. And man, if there was ever a time to really have them, they feel like they're on the outs right now. You know, they couldn't really put it all together. There was just something about, man, the level of their player shined.
Yeah, and similar to Man City and Arsenal, where like obviously there's a title on the line, Everton had a real sniff and real possibility at a European place if they beat Liverpool.
And what an iconic moment to get into a European spot by beating Liverpool.
Right. So it was our six-pointer in its own way. And just at the I kind of thought, look, it's on a set piece, like sort of anything can happen and it gets kind of crazy. I thought Jordan Pickford was a little too outside of the box. Like he was caught in between of like, should I go for it or should I stay on the line and stop a shot? And he was not, he didn't do either. And I thought that was like the I mean, it was just a good header and it was, you know, and Virgil van Dijk is a very physical player. So it's frustrating to lose that way in that moment. It's just like 2 minutes left and you leave with a draw and you leave with the season having a little bit more, like more of an outlook and more optimism. So yeah. And look, have I been used to going to these fan fests and Everton losing? Yes, we have experienced it quite a few times, but there have been some fun ones and some wins and stuff like that. But yeah, I would like that the joy of a few big wins like that. We just didn't get it.
How about a nice draw? That would have worked for both of us. I mean, the return of the legend.
The gang is back together.
You know how hard it was for us to get this man on the show the first time? They were told he was only allowed to eat 4 grams of carbs. And we were taking him on a pizza tour.
Yeah, there's no more diet restrictions.
Yeah,
now.
Come on.
We got cookies for him.
Yeah, let's go, bro. We got to chub him up a little bit.
Last time we hung out, OG Cooligans fans will remember this. It must have been, what, 2018, I think?
The pizza tour. Hold on, come in.
Somebody's knocking.
Oh, no, they dropped off another package. In three, two.
It's Pirlo coming in.
It's a pizza.
No, Pirlo doesn't do anything. Remember that, New York?
Anyway, the last time we hung out was we did a pizza tour. OG yes. Cooligans fans will remember this. We took a New York City FC player at the time on a pizza tour. And
he wore the Timbs.
And it also, I mean, it also changed the trajectory of our careers. It was 100%. A big moment in Cooligans lore. So I'm honored to have him back. Now this time, in our studio.
We don't have to convince his agent's sister anymore. We actually did it. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Tommy McNamara.
Tommy Mac of Brooklyn FC. What's good, brother?
What's up? Thanks for having me. You guys are so big time now. I'm surprised that I'm even on the show anymore. You guys went like this.
Yeah,
since then,
you're
so
a legend.
I'm surprised that I even got called back.
Our producer said, hey, Tommy Mac is going to do the show. We said, who?
I said, Google him. Remind me.
But got what he looks like.
And the photos, yeah, me yeah. standing next to you with a slice. I said, he's allowed on.
No, man, Tommy, it's an honor to have you back. And you know, when we first obviously were introduced to you was in 2015. We say this story all the time. When New York City FC had their inaugural season.
Which, by the way, that was us in 2015.
Yeah, we're looking
in my kitchen.
You look the same. Yeah, you look the same.
Okay. Well, he looks younger. I'm skinnier, thank God. Which only goes to drop out.
So there's been progress. But, I mean, look, New York City FC changed our lives. We say this all the time. Just that team being introduced to Major League Soccer. And then the fact that we got to talk to players and we did a pizza tour with you. And I wonder if it, for us, like a lot of people still bring that up. I'm like, oh, wasn't that NYCFC?
Why didn't you do more of that?
Yeah, they're
it's so hard to get people.
We can't get players to do that regularly.
Go travel around New York City. Well, just spot to spot. Yeah,
the teams are like,
pizza.
You want to feed our player a bunch of carbs? Like, no. Like, you guys are so restricted.
We did it in the off season. Yeah. But for us, it's something that people still bring up. But what are your, let's start by reminiscing. What are your memories of that pizza tour? And does anybody ever bring it up to you and stuff like that?
No, I remember back in 2015 when you guys started coming around with New York City FC and stuff. And I don't know if it was, no, it must not have been that year, but when you did something with Jack Harrison too, very early on, was like, what, 2016 or something?
Okay, no,
I remember. You guys were part of the beginning with all of us.
Yeah,
I remember the pizza tour, of course. Yeah, we went to like whatever, 3-4 places. It was the first time you ever introduced me to Mike's Hot Honey.
Yes.
That I never knew it. And then now I still have it at home.
Oh, really? So, Mike. You should nice shout for Mike Kurtz, bro. Yeah. Look at that. It's funny, the two main places that we put on the video, Scars moved out of that location and Lombardi's doesn't have that area anymore and they got rid of the oven. So it's like, that's how long ago it was. Those areas don't even exist. That's how fast New York moves.
But it also shows
how long Tommy Mack's career has gone on. Because it is not over. But you know, now let's talk about Brooklyn FC and this time. And you are a polished vet. I mean, this is I'm sure you going into this team, there's a different role, right? I'm sure players are maybe younger players are looking to you for a little bit of that guidance. But talk about your introduction to this team. What made you want to join the project to begin with, and how things are going now with Brooklyn FC?
Yeah, no, I you know, when Brian McBride got named as a sporting director back in the fall, October or whatever, and knew that Brooklyn FC was coming about, I really wanted to be a part of it. I reached out to him kind of right away, and we talked initially. He wanted to get the coach on board first before anything. And so that all happened and the process worked out. But I really wanted to come back to New York, like to build a club again in New York City was very appealing to me kind of at the end of my career, having the opportunity to have kind of done it at the beginning of my career. Yeah, so seeing it kind of on both sides. It's been great. Like, you know, I am the oldest player. we're there. We finally got there.
What up, young blood?
You finally got there. At 26.
No, it is a fairly young team. There's a couple other guys that are in their 30s, but it's a fairly young team, but it's a talented group. So it's nice to kind of like be a part of that energy, enjoy being in New York City, playing soccer. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully I can be a reference to them as an example of, you know, how to be a professional.
One of my favorite stories about just getting to hang out with you that first time is getting to hear the story of how you became a pro, or at least you wanted to become a pro. You either had a family member that played at Leeds, or you saw Leeds in person. And you were like, I think I could do this. What, can you just remind me what that story was?
Yeah. So my best friend growing up, Phil McPhail, his first cousin was Stephen McPhail. He was born and raised in Ireland and Dublin, and he went over to Leeds at like between 16 and 18 into their academy, and then made his first team debut then. And that was in like the early 2000s. So that was when Leeds was, you know, in the Champions League, competing for Premier League titles. And so we were 11 years old, which would have been, you know, 2002 or so.
Yeah.
We went over, we watched a game at Ellen Road. It was like the first time I actually watched a game live, Premier League game.
Yeah.
And like got to meet him. Steven was amazing to us. It was a group of like five or six of us kids with my friend, his brother, etc. And Steven brought us in his car to the hotel after the game. We met like Mark Viduka, Ian Hart. He brought like five or six of his friends, players. So like that was the first time of like, oh, professional soccer, like it's attainable. I know someone that's there. I see it in the flesh. And so that's what like really made like the switch click in my head of like, this is a realistic opportunity. You know, I didn't know where or how, but that was the moment.
And eventually you go on to play. And when we met you, you were playing at New York City FC and you were a fan favorite, which had to, it must bug you out that you're getting as much cheers as like Pirlo. Bug you out, no?
Yeah, it is. It's so like unique and American, right? Like
more goal contributions.
More passion, maybe.
No. I mean, look,
jokes aside.
Look, we've there's legendary folks that you know, obviously the marquee names that you know initially were the foundation of the team. Is you know, it's kind of nice to be you, because you are still a fan favorite. People still bring your name up. It is not a you know, when I think of like NYCFC, and you're not a random name that comes up of just somebody who played there for a little bit.
When you see the OG jerseys, it's like you and Poku.
Yeah.
Are the ones you see the most.
There's a lot of you know, I think as NYCFC fans, there's still a lot of fondness. And one thing I want to ask about that is that obviously after you left NYCFC, you went to a few different clubs. You spent a decent amount of time in Houston. You spent some time at the Reds. But what were the games like playing against your former team, especially when, you know, the fans, they still had a lot of love for you, even at those other clubs?
Yeah. It was nice. It was the first time we came back to Yankee City and was with Houston. And to be fair, the club put on a very nice like presentation video welcoming back. And I thought that was really sweet of them. I didn't expect that. I didn't think I necessarily even deserved that. I thought that was really nice. And so kind of had that little tribute moment with the fans. We played so many games in COVID at Red Bull there that I actually only played like maybe once or twice in Yankee Stadium after that again with the Revs. Yeah. So, you know, it's cool. Like I felt like, you know, especially at that time in 2015, there was this really close connection between the fans and the players, and it wasn't so like distant. I don't know what it is now. I don't want to speak on that, So I felt like I actually got to know a lot of the people in the supporters groups, like even you guys yourselves. And even now at the Brooklyn games, there's people in New York City FC jerseys yelling, Tari. Like, I really appreciate that. And, you know, it meant a lot to me to represent the club. And I thought it was really cool that, like, we got to all grow the club together kind of in the beginning stages.
That's very cool. That we had Chris Wingert on the show, and he talked about, like, just wild moments of, like, seeing Pirlo in training or getting those moments. Did you have a moment with him where you were like, damn, there's magic in them boots, bro?
Yeah, I don't even know if I told this publicly, but this will be for you guys.
Love it.
I may have said it before, but I don't think so. I moved into the city in 2017, so for the last 2 years. Uh-huh. And I was living around the corner from Andrea. And I was not making big money. And so parking in the city, as you know, was crazy. So I was like, Andrea, can I just come carpool with you? Yeah. So for like a couple of months, Andrea was driving me up and back to training every day. And I'm sat in the car with Andrea.
He's holding a glass of wine.
26 years old. And I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, he's driving me.
Right. Oh, well, Pirlo holding a glass of wine in his car. Yeah. He's like, it's not illegal. He's like,
no, Pirlo allowed.
In Italy.
No, man. That's fantastic. I mean, those moments.
Did he give you any advice? Hold on. Before did he like give you any advice?
No, we didn't really like talk like that about like specifically, but we talked more about like our lives. I tried to be cool and I didn't want to ask him too many stuff about his career.
Yeah,
of course it would come out a little bit, but kind of more so talked about like what's going on with his family, what they're doing for the weekend, that type of thing.
Oh, cool. All right.
Okay.
What is he doing this weekend? let's just go there and do it.
He's back coaching in the Middle East.
Yeah, that's
I believe
right.
so.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if
yeah.
he's still
we
there.
Got to, I mean, we got to meet him at the 10 year anniversary.
The big panel they did.
Yeah. And it was, weirdly enough, because I've only heard so much lore about Pirlo, and everybody's like, what does he smell like? What is his hair? And blah, blah, blah.
And he carries himself in a very, like, he broods. He doesn't stand.
But there's a very humility is like, he's very humble. He's very, like, kind of serious. I mean, but and slightly playful.
Yeah,
and
he's funny.
But you wouldn't.
Once he gets comfortable with people.
But you wouldn't think it based on how everybody talks about him, how he plays on the field. I don't even, does he smile on the pitch? I don't think I've ever seen it necessarily, but he's just, he's much more friendly is not the exact word, but he's much more like chill than I think people expect.
Very much so. Did you have a bigger connection maybe with Lampard being another midfielder?
I actually think I had a bigger connection with Andrea because of the time we spent in the car.
Yeah, Lampard didn't drive you to go get ice cream.
Frank was great too. Frank was, he was a great person.
Yeah.
So like, I think we got really lucky that they were all really good people and so kind of made the, you know, the whole thing great. But yeah, Frank was a great example to us. I'll give you a story of his. I probably told it before. I definitely said it before. But we were in training and I was playing as a midfielder and he was playing as a midfielder of the other team, like 11v11. Yeah. This was like one of the early on when he got there or whatever. And the ball like went out wide for a crossing opportunity for like his team. And we were like, you know, 30 yards out from goal or whatever. And I like, he was on my shoulder. I like looked at the ball for a second to get a reference of where and when's the cross is coming. We're coming back towards the top of our 18. And I looked back and he was already 2 yards behind me, like to the goal. And so in that like split second that I looked away from him, he went off my back shoulder and beat me into the box. And then the ball didn't come to him, thank God. But that was like an eye-opening moment of like, no wonder why he scored hundreds of goals in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like because of his movement in the box.
You think he timed it?
Yeah, I
to
think
knowing
so.
You were looking
I
away.
I think so, yeah. I think, wow, I think he just elite. Does it like subconsciously. I don't even think it's like consciously. Yeah. I think it's just, yeah.
Okay.
That's like elite level of just like knowing when, that's like an eagle, you know, knowing when, or a hawk when to hit their prey.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I want to ask about your time with the Revs and working with Bruce Arena because Bruce spoke very highly of you a few times. I would see a comment and I think it's
a couple New York guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
So can you talk about that relationship and like why, like we see Bruce now with San Jose taking arguably one of the worst, I mean, last season, one of the worst defensive teams in MLS history. And now they're I mean, like, you know, running on, you know, they're doing fantastic. But can you talk a little bit about Bruce and that relationship and why you think he saw you as like a really good fit for his for his project?
No, I loved Bruce. Bruce is the best. I feel very, again, fortunate in my career to get to have played for him. In my opinion, he's the best American soccer coach ever. He's that guy. So he's a New Yorker through and through. He'll just tell you how it is. and that's it. There's no qualms or whatever. And if you play well, really well, it's like, good job. He'll give you a good job. Yeah, well done or something. Yeah. It's kind of the extent of it. But like, I think
dad doesn't hug.
Yeah. Like, he shows love in other ways.
It's fine. He gave you the bigger piece of chicken. The man loves you.
If you mess up, he'll let you know He'll let you know real quick. But no, what I really appreciate about him is that he really understood me as a player and a person. And he just asked me to do things that I was good at that could help the team. And I think that like getting to work with him made me realize why he was so successful and continues to be. He's a really unbelievable manager in the sense that like he builds a roster how he wants to build it. And then he looks at all the individual pieces and he's adaptable and flexible to put them all into roles that suit all of them and suit the collective rather than being like, you know, I play 4-3-3. You have to fit this. You have to fit whatever. No, he gets the players that he wants, builds the roster that he wants, and then he makes sure that it fits and works for everybody. So it's no surprise that he's working again at San Jose.
Well, okay. What we've heard about Bruce Arena, especially when his came with his role with the national team, got him to a quarterfinal, right? Clearly the most successful manager that or coach that the U.S. men's national team had. But some of the things were like, he would say things like, be the first to foul, be the first to take a shot on goal. And there was like another one, be the first to do this. And it was a lot of it feels rudimentary from what we understand the game to be like the Pep Guardiola, who's like, if you need to be looking 30 degrees to the left in order for us to score a goal. Like, you know, that sort of micromanaging where he seems more of a macro manager. I've put you in the best position possible. Now go out there and prove to me you deserve that position. What's the in-between? What are we, people who didn't get to play with him, what are we missing that he does, maybe even on a personal level, that can make players become a unit and work together as a team so much better than they could with another manager? Yeah. It's very frustrating.
You're right. That is, he almost looks at it at more of a macro level and it's not so detailed. Basically what he asks of us as a group is he's win your 1v1 battles, win your matchups. If 7 or 8 of you win your battle against the guy you're playing against, we're going to win more times than not. Like, it's as simple as that. It's, you know what I mean? He just simplifies everything down to, and strips everything down to like that level. And then, I mean, of course he prepares the games and prepares us for teams and opponents and stuff that you don't see. But yeah, he keeps it that simple.
Sometimes hearing that feels like, no, the game is more complex than that, right? Like, it almost seems like the game has evolved outside of a coach like Bruce Arena,
but he keeps being successful,
finding success, and I think it's one of those things where you know you've interviewed him, I think on Morning Footy, if I remember correctly, and
he was very annoyed by me. he doesn't like the joking around. He's like, could you please be serious?
Yeah. Well, I think, especially in a, like a media.
Once they told him, I could hear the guy off camera go, he's a comedian. The guy on the left is a comedian. He goes, oh.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
They're letting clowns in these things? Which,
he 100%. You heard the eye roll on microphone. You could hear the eye roll. But then after that, he was like, he played along a little bit. Yeah. He was like, I understand what this guy's role is now.
Because it feels like there's the, you know, like Alexis, the Pep Guardiola, like super tactician, tactical kind of stuff. Like, it seems like that's where the game kind of has gone. But Bruce sort of just like finds a way. And I love that he always like, you know, there were a couple quotes of him like shouting you out, because I don't know how it feels as a professional, you know, you're obviously contract negotiations or whatever. It's always nice to have like good publicity. Maybe you end up with another team and clearly the coach likes you. But when you have a coach talking about you like that, when there's also like criticism of you and stuff like that, like how does it help your confidence when you're in that situation?
Yeah, no, it's someone like him that speaks and says things, like I said, he doesn't say things to say things. He says what he means and how he feels. And, you know, he wouldn't have said that necessarily to my face, but I would have felt that appreciation from him during the course of the week, the time we worked together and stuff like that. And then, yeah, if he gets asked about it, he might say it in the media publicly if he feels like it's the right thing to do.
Okay.
But that's kind of like the moment where you're like, oh, okay, like, all right, I think I'm doing okay here. He said something positive.
Yeah, it was good. Like, it was positive. He said my name. Yeah. Which, talk about Brian McBride, because I got to work with him at CBS as well. What a lovely human being. I'm so like, nice. You know, you could be a prick. You know, like, you were the greatest striker for a very long time. Like, he could be, you had a stand named after him. He could be so much more. And he's like the sweetest, most heartwarming guy. Yeah. What does he tell you that you bring? Like, what was his message to you about what you bring to BKFC?
Yeah, no, you're right. Brian is one of the nicest people I ever met.
He's like a dad. I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and it was Chris Winger, actually, who I spoke to get in touch with him because he had played with him in the past. And Chris is like, what a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great person. Like, first and foremost is what he said about him. And then, yeah, getting to work with him, he is like, he's such a lovely person. He really cares. He's so humble. But yeah, what he brought me in for was to help be a leader for the group and kind of be a voice for the team and kind of help lead this and get this project off the ground. You know, there was going to be, and we have experienced bumps along the way of trying to get this off the ground. And so kind of just being a voice to kind of keep everyone together, but also to kind of express, you know, how do the players feel? What do the players need? What do we want? And kind of be that voice backup.
Interesting. And now that you play in the USL, there's a lot of conversation about USL Championship, USL's first division. Can it compete? I was lucky enough to go to Louisville and see Louisville City versus Indy 11. I was like, this is insane. What a beautiful stadium.
Beautiful.
I can't believe this isn't in MLS. Like, just looking at it.
Their training ground's unbelievable, from what I've heard. I haven't seen it, but from what I've heard.
They have two exact versions. Like, there's a building in the middle, and then it's split in the middle for the men and the women so that no one's sharing. Everyone has equal. It's just one of the most professionally well done. If that was in England, people would be raving about it.
Just
it's in America.
Did they just be Austin or something?
Yes. Yeah, last
Open
night.
Cup. Yeah, yep.
So because it's not, if it was in England, everyone would say it's great, but because it's in Louisville and it's not in MLS, people aren't really talking about it, but they should because it is beautiful. But now that you're in this league, the conversation a lot of people are having is, can this league compete with MLS? And obviously that steps away, right? We're only in the beginning stages of this. But what are your thoughts on that? Just seeing it on a week-to-week basis.
I think on the field, actually, you can see, I think for me on the field, the top teams, particularly in the USL Championship, when they go and play in these Open Cup games and they play the second half of rosters of MLS clubs, they're at a minimum as good, if not normally better than those teams. And I think you see Louisville playing Austin. I think Austin even actually last night, what people were saying, played like 7 or 8 first team guys.
Yeah,
and, you know what I mean? So I think actually you'd be surprised that the soccer quality is not that big of a difference. I think when you start looking at, you know, your Son, your Mueller, that's where the difference and discrepancy really starts to jump. So I think from a soccer playing, the difference isn't that far away. I think from an infrastructure, it's still, you know, an infrastructure and investment and that type of thing, it's definitely a far way away.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me a lot of MLS almost like 15 years ago, which was like kind of right before I came in, where clubs were still playing, like San Jose was still playing at a college, one of the California schools.
I forget the school,
And, you know, I forget what clubs, but like some clubs didn't have their own training ground yet and that type of thing. So it kind of feels like that 15 years ago is kind of the moment where we're in now. And if you look where MLS went in 15 years.
Yeah, skyrocket.
I don't know. Will USL do the same thing? I don't know. You know what I mean? They're trying to do things a little bit different with the promotion relegation.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. Clubs. Yeah, I mean, that's my next question. I mean, what does that excite you? Is that interesting? Is it what do you think? We don't really get to ask players this specifically, especially players that played in MLS. The introduction of promotion relegation. I mean, our audience, lots of people are just like,
oh, they're so excited for this conversation.
But they're like, American soccer will not grow if we don't have promotion relegation. But as a player, how much of an impact or difference do you think it would make as from a player development perspective and then also from a fan interest perspective?
Yeah. Oh, man, this is like so complex and nuanced. I think I'm actually like, I hope it comes in to give an alternative to MLS. And I hope I'm still in the league playing because I actually would really enjoy playing in a promotion relegation, having never done that before. Sure. And you know, actually getting that experience so I can speak on it from a place of experience. Man, there's so many different things that I think obviously winning becomes more important on a week to week basis in terms of, you know, promotion or survival. But I think the flip side of it, you know what I mean? Maybe younger players don't get the opportunity. And because you need to survive, you need to stay in the league to keep the revenues. You can't risk going down the leagues and losing the revenues. Maybe, I don't know. You know what I mean? I think it's just so nuanced. But I think it would be really cool for me as a player to experience it. And I think it would be really good for American soccer to kind of get another... like a league and kind of difference and see where does what go.
Do you think it would be a lot more pressure on you on a week to week basis?
I think that from within the club, yes. And I think certainly at bigger markets in USL, I would expect that. Probably at the smaller markets across the USL, it would probably be maybe a little bit less.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from the people and outside. But as the league grows and continues to grow over, you know, 15 years, I'm not saying they're going to do it, but if it went in the trajectory of MLS and like right. that, then yeah, there would be definitely a lot of outside pressure from the
fans.
Yeah,
I mean, we always hear the stories of like, you know, a team gets relegated and like the Sunderland Till I Die, like the secretary loses her job. And so there's like,
every time like, I didn't get us relegated. I answered every phone. Yeah, my XG is crazy.
So it's like not having experienced that. You also get the stability of not having to put that level of pressure on even just the employee. So it's an interesting aspect for as a player to like kind of the curiosity of experience. Because maybe if Stacy is at the risk of losing her job, maybe you have a golden boot season. You know what yeah. I mean? Like maybe something else is triggered in you
feel
right?
That. You feel that oomph a little more.
Yeah. I don't know if you'll perform or not better, but you'll definitely feel it.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? If this lady who's, you know, looked after you for 4 years
right.
and, you know her family and her kids right, or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Just her kids yeah. are crying in the stands. Yeah. Please, like, Tommy, please.
Yeah. I think I should try harder on this. Score a goal. Por favor. I don't know why they're speaking
Spanish.
We're going
to be unemployed.
The kids are speaking Spanish. So you're like, I got to learn Spanish.
No,
but
man.
Talk to me a little bit about being now the vet, the guy who hit this, and I'm sure there's a lot of younger players that you're running into that are their goal is to get into MLS or into some of these other leagues. They want to use, you know, USL as that springboard, or maybe even be looked at by scouts in other countries. You're someone who've been in that at those levels. How do you give advice to these younger players?
Yeah, I try to be first, like very, you know, open with them and connect with them and kind of build and develop a relationship mm-hmm. so that they feel comfortable, like with me. That I'm a teammate with them and we're on the same level and the same yeah. page. You know, I don't really go out and try to just give advice and say this and that and yeah. throw stuff at people. If I feel like it's necessary or can help, then I will. But more so, I want to just be like a reference of, you know what I mean? This is how I handle myself. This is what I've done. You know what I mean? I can be an example to you guys. And then if they do feel comfortable with me and want to ask me stuff and get my opinions, then I want to make sure that like I'm there for them and do that. But I definitely don't want to come across as like, I know better than you. You need to do this, that, right. that, the yeah. other. Particularly the guys that we have a couple of guys on our team that do have the talent and quality to move on beyond USL that yeah. are also in the younger demographic. And so I try to like almost... You know, now I don't know if they'll hear it or not, but now they might hear it. But I try to look out for them almost a little bit more than everybody else of like encouraging them, like yeah. not saying that, but like, hey, keep going. Like we need goals out of you. We need this out of you. We right. need performances. And when they do it, encouraging it of like, do that again. Come on, do that again. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
kind of like subtle ways like that.
Is it common at your level that maybe younger players can get distracted? Because it feels like you'd want, I don't know, I'm assuming athletes are the most competitive people we've ever come across. It's mm-hmm. insane. You guys are all broken individuals. and at that level, you would assume that they're hungry to even show you like, look what I can do. Does that slide sometimes? Does that slip away? Maybe it's a confidence thing?
Yeah, it does. I don't know like what to attribute it to, but mm-hmm. no, it does. Some people are wired like that. And some people just kind of aren't quite as competitive or you know what I mean? Want to like take responsibility and show and,
yeah.
you know, so sometimes you got to try to pull that out of people. But the group we have in Brooklyn is very self-motivated, which kind of makes it really enjoyable. I was in Vegas last year and it was frustrating to me because, you know, the group wasn't very self-motivated
right.
and they were having a rough season when I came into it and it was kind of very dejected, very down. And you know what I mean? It was hard for me to deal with that because I'm kind of not like that. I'm very self-motivated.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. Even as you're speaking now, I mean, the last time we had a long conversation was at, you know, different pizza places, but there's a clear maturity and wisdom that you have gained in that time. I mean, I'm hearing a little Coach McNamara.
I was going to say that.
I mean,
I'm getting a little sense of the guy wants to hold the clipboard and a whistle.
It's not a crazy thought, but given time, maybe you can answer that. Maybe if that is in the future for you, if that's in the cards. But when it comes to, you know, I've always appreciated you and loved you as a player because obviously you've scored some of my favorite goals I've seen in New York City FC history. But you are also a player that is like I think can sometimes be under the radar, and then people not exactly know like what your exact strengths are outside of like long range bangers. But can you talk about an aspect of your game that people may not be familiar with that you worked hard to develop and obviously keep you on the field and in starting lineups?
Yeah, I think the biggest attribute to that was kind of my soccer intelligence. I kind of feel like almost arrogant saying this. But like
we
my
allow
ability,
that on the show. Nah, we know, encourage that on the show. Yeah.
Just like you tell the younger players, like, yo, do that again. That's what we're doing for you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So like my understanding of soccer and what I think particularly at New England especially was I felt like I really helped the team to perform and provide a platform for the team to perform when I was on the field. And I didn't really have any very like big moments for the team or anything like that, but I just made a lot of the right decisions, small decisions, but over and over and over and over again to give the platform to guys like Carlos Gil at the time, yeah. Adam Buxa, Gustavo Bo to go out, perform and have the big moments.
Gustavo Bo's a maniac. Yeah, we'll talk about that on camera.
It's hard to like put it into words, but I think that's my biggest strength of like my adaptability and flexibility to kind of help the team perform and kind of provide almost like a glue a base for players to express themselves.
No, every team needs a player like that because it also takes away. You need some players with like the flashy winger that has a big ego, and then you need the players that do not have an ego and see kind of the bigger picture and stuff like that. So no, credit to
which
you.
Which is like, it feels very like Scholes-y, very Busquets.
It reminds me of like, not the same player by any means, but it reminds me of James Milner almost. Or Jordan Henderson a little bit more of a modern example.
Right. I'll do what needs to be done in order for us for you to get the opportunities.
Yeah.
And that's something that you can really improve on the youth, especially the players around you. You guys have a really big match coming up. I know that.
Yeah, against Sac Republic on Tuesday.
Yeah, Maimonides
Park, which...
Baseball field?
It is a baseball field.
Only way you play in New York. Huh?
Always, yeah. That's why I perform my best. I'm the most comfortable on a baseball field in New York.
Coach calls you, he's like, we need you. You're like, you guys got a home plate?
Yeah.
Because if so, I got this.
I was there just a couple months ago because I was IMC'd. Zor Mamdani had a charity game with NYC Footy and stuff like that. So I got to see, they were like, 5 fields put onto this, but I got to experience. I mean, the fans were super into it. But what the next game is? On the 21st against Sac Republic. Sac Republic just lost in the Open Cup.
Yeah.
Sac Republic also a historic team in USL. I have a lot of good history. But how are you adapting now? I mean, spending some time in USL and playing against these teams, like. How are you like physically feeling and you know you mentioned like it's like later in your career but how are you finding the adaptability to the league?
I feel really good. I find the league actually to be a little bit like less athletic than when in MLS. I don't want to say like less athletic, but you have a little bit more time on the ball. You have a little bit more time, and so you know the transition hasn't been that hard. And then. You know, the travel is what we used to do the first half of my MLS career. Yeah. You know what I mean? Commercial flights, you know, layovers, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's cool. And I'm really enjoying the opportunity of going and playing at some of these fields, like Louisville's which great. I never got to.
Yeah.
Sac Republic's supposed to be amazing, which unfortunately, it's nice to play in my home, but I would love to, like, Pittsburgh, I haven't been yet, but, like, it's kind
River
of
Stadium,
an iconic
yeah.
field
Dude,
with the train
so
coming. Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I'm really looking forward. We went to Detroit, which was, like, you know, it was a crazy field, but it's just, like, crazy experience. Yeah. So it's cool. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying, like, you know, getting and going and playing in some of these places.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, a part of your career, there were some whispers that the Irish team was considering you. Do you have Irish citizenship?
I'm a citizen. I've had it since I was like 16, 15 when I got it.
Okay. A little exit strategy for the U.S. wife's trying to get it.
We're all trying to figure it out.
We're all trying to get there.
The old European Union.
Buddy, a little EU action over here.
Yeah.
But the question I have for you is, I just headlined in Dublin. It was beautiful. I mean, my wife and I go to Ireland a lot. The League of Ireland seems to be taking leaps and bounds. Did you ever give that a thought?
So I actually almost went there when I was 19 and left college. And I had the opportunity to go to UCD at the time, University College of Dublin, who they kind of did like a quasi, they were professional, but they were like also in college and just getting scholarships kind of thing. So it was kind of like a little bit of both. So I had that opportunity then. I strongly considered it, but I decided to stay. I was at Brown at the time. I was like, should probably graduate with Ivy League degree.
It's Brown.
Wow, it's impressive.
I was like, I probably
shouldn't
give this up.
The Guinness isn't as good, but it's pretty cool. Pretty cool to have a Brown degree.
Yeah, and then when my contract, I always thought in my mind, I really wanted to go play abroad. I really wanted to go to the A League in Australia. And then on the way off the back of that, I really wanted to come and play in Ireland. So that was how I really wanted to end my career.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, the A League thing. When my contract ended at the end of 2024 and I was a free agent, I was 33, turning 34. I expressed interest in like to every team in League of Ireland. Like, I'll come. I just want to play 1 year. Like, the salary doesn't matter to me. Like, I just want to have this experience. I followed the league for the last 10 years.
Up the bows, if anyone's watching.
And nobody wanted it.
That's crazy.
And I did circled the same thing again this offseason, the same thing again.
I'm going to make some calls.
Teams didn't even answer. And anybody that did, I appreciate that they answered at least could just be like, look, we're not interested. Like, okay, no problem. But yeah, no, I did for like two off seasons try to make something happen.
Damn, bro. If your last name was like McNamanino, well, then they would be like, okay, man.
Problem. MC is North Ireland, right? They're like, go up there.
This is awesome for us because obviously the nostalgia and I think the reconnecting, you know, weirdly enough, it's like you are a huge part of why we're even like in this studio and all this stuff.
Yeah, there was like a moment where we were trying to prove to the world who we were, because I think, and you probably experienced this, when you hear two comedians inside, everyone was like,
Whoa.
Especially from like traditional media and stuff.
Are they going to make fun of us? Because, you know, it's a very isolated world, especially at that time in 2015. So for us to do like, how do we differentiate ourselves from some of the bigger podcasts? And also, how do we prove to people like, we want to have fun with you, not at you, you know?
Right.
And that moment, you agreeing to do the pizza tour was a moment for us to say, okay, we can differentiate ourselves and we can have a good time with a player. And we could just show that to the world. We didn't want to add anything extra to it. We just wanted to have a good time with you. And you were so cool. You were so down for it. You were having a good time with it, where you could have been a prick. We didn't know. You know what I mean? And you were so chill. I was like, what an awesome.
No, it was.
It's one of the proudest things we've ever done.
Without a doubt. We want to say.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you. Like, you know, again, in person, because it's been a long time. But you, like I said, you have provided a ton of just incredible moments, especially goals in your career. I do want to ask two questions. What is your favorite goal that you've ever scored? Because, I mean, there's a bunch. I mean,
it's a highlight reel.
Yeah. It's almost all highlight reels. You tap ins, Tommy's never heard of one. But your favorite goal, I'm going to ask your favorite goal and then favorite assist, because I think a lot of scores, you know, people score some great goals. But favorite goal first comes to mind.
Favorite goal, I'm split between two a little bit. The first one is, actually, the one I scored against Red Bull when we were losing 3-0, was actually probably my best strike and best goal.
It was a lost performance
and a bad performance. So it's kind of like it has
but
that
we
connotation
had
to,
walk
to
away
it.
We're proud of.
I think the other one is the one in Portland when Pirlo assisted it to me. Yes. I think it's like pretty iconic, like the visuals of it, the Pirlo assist, where the camera was. So like
it was
pretty cool.
A Pirlo like just light little, yeah, just little outside the boot pad. Like, hey, you do something with it. Bam.
Yeah. I don't want
it. I'm screaming for it from him. Yeah. He's like, all right, fine. I'll give you the ball.
Can you walk back that goal? I mean, I've obviously seen it 100 times.
It's a beautiful goal.
But the moment itself, you just even mentioned now. You said I'm screaming for it. But are you exaggerating? What was the moment like when the fact
did you see it as Pirlo gets it?
Yeah. I remember, because it started, I believe, on the right-hand side, and it was like an overhit cross that like then came back, or Pirlo got it or whatever. And when he had it there, of course, he attracted players, and I'm stood like
11 people.
I'm stood in the hot spot, as we used to call it back then. I'm like, come on, give me the ball, give me the ball. He just flicks it, and then it's set up perfectly.
Well, does he add extra pressure knowing Pirlo passes the ball? No, I got to do something.
I didn't even
this.
Think about it at the time, or even I loved playing with him, man. Because he could just pound me the ball anywhere, so it was the best.
When you got to New York City FC, like I used to follow MLS very, very casually. I didn't know many of the players, and you got to the team, and if you were one of those players, I'm like, I didn't know the dudes that I had never heard of that could do stuff like this.
Yeah.
When that your goals and that shot, that, I mean, your curling
iconic zone icon- 14. You know?
But that
left and chair.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the, like, the trust that you earn from your teammates? Like, I mean, it when you do, you, do you stop having to scream for the ball because they knew, like, Tommy could do this or whatever? Like,
he's in the Tommy zone.
When you are in, you know, in training and those first few sessions, are the other, are your teammates also like, yo, I didn't know Tommy had a cannon like this? Like, what was that kind of like as far as like proving yourself to that degree?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think up until that point it really happened so much in training, that specific, like, yeah, that specific shot and scenario, which is funny that it's repeated so many times. The first time it did happen, though, was it was the first start I got under Jason Christ that first year. It was like the 12th game into the season. We were like 11 games winless.
Yeah,
and
I
he finally
that.
Started me and Poku together.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't have that great of a game. I was just kind of around. And then Poku passed me the ball in that spot. And I was just
which
like,
he never
I
does.
I was like, yeah, that's because he was too tired because yeah. it was his first start yeah, too. Yeah. So he was tired too. So yeah, he gave me the ball and I was like, I have to do something. I haven't done really much of anything yeah, yeah. all game. So I was like, I'm just shooting this. I shot it and then that was it. So it was like, yeah, okay. So now I just proved it to everybody off the first start, like right. hold up.
Is there any anything specific to the to your technique in that shot? Because it's not easily repeated. I don't really know of many players, whether it's like, you know, I've seen like videos of like Marco Royce talking about free kicks and stuff like that. And you never really took free kicks, but you look like someone
who could
and would be interested in doing that. But is there anything you can talk to the technical ability to do that with the ball? Because I don't know, for whatever reason, it's not something easily replicated by many yeah. players in the league.
I think part of it is actually a little bit genetically. Like, my feet do come outwards. So, like, it makes it, like, I don't really have to open up all that much because gotcha. They're already, yeah. like, three quarters opened up to begin with.
Happy feet. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got, yeah. Exactly. Like my sister penguin, has the like same one.
Tommy, yeah. You know, we're breaking news. Tommy has web feet.
Yeah.
Don't have that. Otherwise, I'd be swimming.
Yeah,
I'd be
it's swimming. It's the sixth toe on each foot that hits the ball.
Okay.
What's your favorite assist if one comes to mind?
My favorite assist. I actually don't even like fully remember it, but it was against DC. It was either 2015 or 2016 as well. And it was a ball where I made, somebody got it on the right-hand side. It was at RFK Stadium. And I made a hard run near post. And I ended up like flicking the ball in behind me to Davi Villa to score. But it was just like, I just remember that as like, you know, it was something where I saw him from behind me and I made like, you know, went tried something a little bit different that worked out.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. No, this is, I mean, look, there's a litany of like just incredible. I love that. And I feel like every like footballer has these like photographic memory of like, you don't necessarily remember the game. You don't remember who passed you the ball. Oh, but there's like you can replay in your head.
Every once in a while, we'll ask someone about a goal and they're like, there was a woman in the third row eating a pizza and the pizza was dripping. I'm like, why? How do you remember that part of it? You know what I mean? It's like what you guys vision with like your vision during the game is so weird. It's like the things you hear, the things you don't hear, the things you see, the things you don't see is so interesting to us.
No, it's been fantastic to like watch you. I feel like our careers kind of follow the same like trajectory.
We all came up together. Yeah, in New York at the same time.
Andrea drove us all to practice. It was great. You got first name bases over here. I guess, you know, we joked about it in the beginning, but what I'm getting from this conversation is that you have an understanding of tactics and management that feels like, or at least people management and player management, feels like that might be a part of your future. What do you think for post-game, you know, post-career, player career, Tommy?
I think you're right that I would actually really enjoy coaching. I think the only thing that I'm hesitant about going into coaching is kind of living the same lifestyle as a player. So same schedule, except longer.
Right.
Job security is, you know, even worse than a player, actually. Sure, yeah. And you have to move and pick up and move. So that's kind of my hesitancy to it. So I'm looking more towards going to ultimately being a sporting director, a chief soccer officer, like kind of, you know, running a club. But obviously there's a lot to go between where I'm at now and there. I think that's what I'm looking to do.
No, I mean, look, there's a bright career ahead of you.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a...
Kid's got a degree from Brown University. I'd hire you.
It'll get him a couple places. Tommy, this
opens a few doors.
This has been an honor for us, man. It's always good to reconnect. It's like we haven't seen you in years and it feels like we just picked up off the last conversation that we had. Your hair's a lot shorter than last time, but...
A little bit older, a couple more grays.
A couple grays, but that's just stress, baby.
Yeah.
But and also, it doesn't matter where you end up. I don't care if you're a sporting director or coach or if you're, you know, whatever, selling loans like Alan Gordon.
You're slinging mortgages.
Who trusts that guy with a mortgage? I don't know. But you're always welcome on the show, dude. You are an OG to us and just an absolute legend.
I know a lot of people are going to love the fact that you're here and we got to do this again. Yeah, so like you said,
the next thing is for you and I to go see him play live.
Yeah, we got to go to a Brooklyn FC game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know you guys won your home opener. I remember seeing that. So that was dope. Yeah. So
is it like a suite or something we can get? We got to talk to my
mom. We can figure it out.
I got to take Brian McBride.
You guys are big time. Brian will take care of you. We know Brian.
We don't sit with Gen Pop.
We're going to be sitting at the hot dog stand. It's going to be dope.
Dude, right at home plate.
I was on live TV when Brian McBride said that the best defender in the U.S. men's national team pool was Shaq Moore, and I didn't laugh and I didn't make a joke. I let him have it, so he owes me one because I could have roasted him in that moment.
Tommy McNamara, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Go to a Brooklyn FC game. Obviously, you go get season tickets, go support him and support Tommy.
Cool crowd, cool people.
Yeah,
the cool logo's vibe. Dope. Shouts to Lucas.
I'm from Brooklyn as well, not too far. I used to hang out on Coney Island all the time as a kid.
And so hot dogs. We're all family.
Okay. Tommy, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Shout out to Tommy McNamara. Thank you so much for joining. The gang is back together.
I didn't know we were in a gang.
We threw up our sign. We crip walked a little bit. It was just a nice
we Mac walk.
We Mac walk. But no, Tommy is the homie, and you know, easily just like one of the people that showed us a lot of support very early on when everybody doubted us. Uh-huh. You know what?
It also makes me really realize how long we've been doing this, where we can like bring back an old friend we haven't talked to in a while.
Look at like a old cameo.
Yeah, like man, damn, bro.
I thought this character was killed off.
Yeah. She went upstairs and never came back. And now she's back down here.
Nah, man. So a lot of Cooligans lore. And Tommy McNamara is very much a part of that. So shout out to Tommy. Shout out to Brooklyn FC for making that happen as well. Go check out a game.
We need to go check out a game. Don't tell them to go check out a game. We need to go check out a game.
Okay, everybody. You don't go.
Don't go to the go. Listen, we'll tell you what it's like.
Apologies for not doing the promo correctly. So shout out to Tommy and Brooklyn FC for making that happen. All right.
We got to get the sporting director on. We got to get Tommy, Brian McBride. Tommy McBride. Tommy. It's another, he's part of the Mad Gang.
just an absolute blast. So shout out to them. Make sure, as always, make sure you follow us on all socials at Soccer Cooligans, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Blue Sky, get over there. Hit like and subscribe.
Blue Sky kind of dead. They need you, bro. Get in there. But
Blue Sky is popping off,
no,
bro.
No, it is not. It is dead, bro.
You ain't using it correctly, bro.
I am. I'm on. I'm like, yo, what? I didn't know that this app had cricket sounds. That's crazy.
I love it, okay? It's too much reading for Alexis. He's not about them words.
Show me photo.
Okay? Follow us on there. And again, another huge thank you to NBC, Premier League's Morning... Premier League Mornings Live. We had an incredible time in Tampa. So fun. And shout out to the winners of this jersey. If you didn't watch that other video, you can win stuff if you comment on our video. So shout out to the winners. And we'll be back on Thursday with a brand new. Do we have a guest on Thursday? I think we do, right? Do we know?
Who knows? They'll find out when we post
Somebody.
I don't know.
It'll be a high-profile name.
Always going to be a hot show, baby. So just listen in. I'm excited for it already. It's not even here.
All right.
Last thing. If you are not watching our YouTube channels, go there right now and hit the hype button. And then just let the video play out. It would really help us out if you hit that hype button. Apparently, it's important now. So just hit it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, good. That means you're not hitting it anywhere else. You only get like one every once in a while. Use it for us.
I don't think I've ever seen the hype button.
Stop that. You've seen it. It's huge. It's very important.
Just tell people where it is. I don't know where it is.
Right under the video, it says hype.
You only get to do it for like one video. Do it for hours. Ah. Pick one of our videos and do it for us.
It's like picking the video you want to marry.
Yeah. I mean? Like, it's like, you know, like when you finish once and then your girl wants to go again, you go, I got to wait a little bit. That's kind of how hype is. You get 3 videos a week. That's, wow, that's a lot more than me. I need more time and 3 chicken parm sandwiches in order to build up again.
What a horrendous analogy. All right, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday.
Hype all over our video, please.
Take care, everybody.
Love you guys.